man, and he stopped.
You're smarter than you look, old man.
Just smarter than you is all.
The men charged. Blades clanged as they met and were deflected. Overton tried for a reverse slash, the flat side of the blade cushioned along his forearm. Ryan bent effortlessly out of the way and slashed for his forehead, drawing blood. Shaking his head to clear his eyes, Overton flipped his blade into the air, caught it by the tip, and threw. Ryan ducked again, the blade slamming into the wood slats behind him. Then he lunged and slashed at the big man's groin, but only sliced into the leather gun belt. Smiling, Overton now drew a matched pair of knives from sheaths behind his back and advanced slowly, constantly shifting his stance and faking thrusts. Needing a distraction, Ryan brushed a hand across his own face, pushing away his eye patch. In spite of himself, Overton's gaze flicked to the puckered wound, and Ryan charged. Once more, their blades clanged, throwing off sparks. Only this time, Ryan got a slice on the back of his hand, the cut nearly deep enough to sever the tendons. Sucking on the rivulet of blood, Ryan reached into his boot and withdrew his own second knife, the Parkerized one Christie had given him. The blade was strong, but no light reflected off the perfectly dulled surface of the military alloy. It wasn't pretty, just a tool for killing, nothing more. Overton glared at the blade, which was difficult to see in the dim light of the partially buried room. Outside, he would have a better chance of winning, but there was no way to climb to the surface without getting chilled in the process. So be it. This was their final arena. Risking all, Overton spun fast to disorient Ryan, then lunged again, low and fast. But the Deathlands warrior met his attack with double steel, and they parted, both alive, but both bleeding from minor wounds. Overton ran a finger across his forehead and brought it down to see the blood. The big man laughed as he licked it off.
Old trick, blinding the enemy with his own blood.
Usually works against children.
Ryan was hoping to get a rise from the man. In circumstances like these, an angry opponent was a dead opponent. They clashed once more and parted, each wounded in new locations. Ryan felt blood trickle down his arm and saw Overton wince as he shifted weight to his right leg. Each was hurting, but Ryan was starting to feel his lack of sleep and knew he was going to tire long before the other man. Time to kick over the tables again. Throwing both knives at once, Ryan turned and yanked the blade from the wooden slat behind him and ducked. Overton stabbed the wall full force, and Ryan stood to bury the stolen knife into the big man's chest. Stepping clear, Ryan watched as his enemy stumbled against the wall, hacking for breath. Then, impossibly, Overton stood and gave him a wide red smile.
Bulletproof vest. Didn't stop the blade, never do. But slowed it enough.
Backing away, Ryan glanced around for the thrown knives, the weapons lost in the darkness.
Goodbye, father.
Overton raised his knife high. Dropping the blade, Overton tumbled forward as a stream of bullets stitched his unprotected back. Bleeding profusely, the would-be baron stood on wobbly legs for a moment, then slowly knelt to the floor and toppled over with a deep sigh.
You gave your word, sir.
And the blue-shirted sec man lowered a smoking Thompson. Within the hour, the lights of the limestone cave were working once more, and brilliant illumination washed over the grisly clearing in somber clarity. Wreckage and bodies were everywhere. Fire burned in the trees, and the ground itself was torn asunder. The spent brass casing of 100 blasters sprinkled across the ruined expanse. Alertly, JB and Christie stood watch as the last 15 blue shirts piled some belongings in a Hummer and drove off into the night, destination unknown. A loaded AK-47 was slung over Nathan's shoulder, his pockets bulging with clips.
Hate to let them go, but as the man said, I gave my word.
Doc cheerfully gestured at the cave with his sword stick.
However, sir, observe the cornucopia of supplies they have left behind for us.
Crates of MRE packs, enough to feed hundreds of people. Blasters galore, a literal ton of ammunition, a second electric generator.
It will all be useful in rebuilding the Ville.
That's for damn sure. Inside the cave, several brown shirts were going through the collection of supplies, making a quick inventory.
And don't forget the three busted armored personnel carriers.
Clem polished a stain off the stock of his bolt-action Enfield. So far, there was no ammo in his caliber stored in the cave, but the hunter had no plans on giving up the new blaster until Kin pried it from his dead hands. Then Clem gave a wry smile.
What the hell? Maybe we can make one good APC out of the mess.
Possible.
Jax dropped a knife before tucking it up his sleeve.
Odd. The radio?
You mean the way they pretended to accidentally smash it?
Nathan frowned thoughtfully.
Guess I might have done the same in that place.
Jack slid the whetstone into a pocket.
Uh-uh. Radios don't work. Why break?
Why indeed?
Diplomatically, J.B. shifted his cigar stub from one side of his mouth to the other, but made no comment on the incident with the radio. He had a crazy idea, but wanted to discuss it with Ryan first. Chewing on a dehydrated sandwich from an MRE pack, Dean approached the group from the cave, the light casting a long shadow ahead of the boy.
We finished removing the rest of the TNT sticks, so nobody can blow up the site underneath us. Now what?
Inventory. Then we start hauling the stuff to Front Royal. The runners have already left. With luck, the wag should be here by dawn.
Sounds good. Any word on the horses?
The Casanova horses are gone and forgotten. Those animals won't stop running until they reach the ocean.
Accepting that, Dean paused for a long overdue swallow and jerked a thumb.
So what about Dad?
Your dad is fine.
Over by the hole in the soil, Mildred was bandaging Ryan's wounds. There were lots of them covering his muscular form, but nothing major. Mostly scratches, cuts, and bruises. Mildred pressed the last adhesive strip onto the bandage.
Okay, you're done. It was only a flesh wound, a lateral dermal slash with no depth worth mentioning.
Thanks. Ryan stood and tucked in his shirt. The new garment was a rich blue, taken from the stores in the cave. He hated the color, but at least it did fit. He'd replace it as soon as possible.
Go get some food.
Mildred packed away her meager medical supplies, now depleted nearly to non-existence after treating so many wounded.
I think the Browns have started raiding the MRE packs.
That's close enough to food for me. The man shuffled off, too tired to lift his boots any higher than necessary. Fighting off a yawn herself, Mildred rubbed her weary eyes. God, they all needed sleep badly, but the work wasn't finished. Not quite yet, anyway. Strange that there were enough blasters in the cave to start a war, but not a single medical bag or first aid kit. Walking over to the square hole in the ground, the shape too reminiscent of a grave for her comfort, Mildred climbed inside the crate. An oil lantern bathed the dying man in bright light. His face pale and waxy, Overton lay sprawled on the dirty floor, a bloody blanket covering the worst of his injuries. Several of the bullets had made it into his stomach. There was simply nothing more painful than getting belly shot. Survivors said it was like having your guts on fire while being eaten alive by ants from the inside. Mildred had personally witnessed several people take their own lives to escape the incredible pain. In agony, the man panted steadily, as if running away from death. But Mildred knew that race was already over. Overton was dying, and there was nothing she could do, even if she wanted to. It was simply amazing he had lasted this long. With a strangled cry, Overton writhed under the blanket, clawing madly at the air.
Oh, kill me.
Dark stains spread on the blanket.
I can't.
Mildred brushed the hair off his sweaty face.
Please.
Debating with herself, the physician rummaged in her medical bag and unearthed a plastic film canister. A strip of duct tape kept it closed airtight. Removing the tape, she popped the top and yanked out the cotton wadding to expose three tiny capsules that resembled vitamins. With extreme care, she broke one in two and placed it up the nose of the dying man.
Sniff.
She closed his other nostril.
Sniff hard.
It burns.
With his mouth open, she poured the other half of the gelatin capsule down his throat. He hawked and coughed.